Okay, hey everybody, what's up? This is Dangerous ASMR, back for another Wednesday audio, some more fairy tales. I thought this time I would do something different since a lot of people liked my drunk fairy tale reading. I decided I would just kind of do another substance, another altered reading of fairy tales. And this time I thought, you know, if you've got alcohol in one hand, what's the other most popular, common way to relax? And I thought, you know, whatever. We're not going to discuss that. It's not important. We're all adults here. We all know what I mean. So I thought I would start from where we left off, which, if I remember correctly, is Hansel and Gretel. I don't even know what accent that was. Hansel and Gretel. And now I am to the next story. Herr Fix-it-up, or Herr Fix-it-up. It's German, right? Like, not hair on your head, but... Okay. Fix-it-up had been a soldier for a long time. When the war came to an end, however, and there was nothing but the same old things to do every day, he resigned from the army and decided to become a servant for a great lord. There would be clothes trimmed with gold, a lot to do, and always new things happening. So he set out on his way and came to a foreign court, where he saw a lord taking a walk in the garden. Fix-it-up did not hesitate. Okay, here's my really quick observation. Fix-it-up, his name is like capital F, fix, hyphen capital I for it, hyphen up for his name, right? So... His first name is pretty much sounding just like a corporation. Like, you named him Fix-it-up. Like, what the fuck? So, I mean, either this is like, he goes by his brand name to be naming your kid, like, you know, appliance repairman. Like, what the fuck? Fix-it-up? Whatever. I'm going off on a tangent. Please forgive me. Okay. Fix-it-up. Right. Okay, he moved briskly over to the lord and said, I'm looking for employment with the great lord. If your majesty is himself such a person, it would give me great pleasure to serve you. There's nothing I don't know or can't do. I know just how to carry out orders, no matter how they are given.
Fine, my son, the lord said. I'd be pleased to have you. First, tell me, what do I desire right now?
Okay, I hear that Fix-it-up's good at all kinds of jobs, King. I think that's what you desire right now. Oh, excuse me. Let's see. Without answering, Fix-it-up spun around, rushed away, and returned with a pipe and tobacco.
Fart. My thoughts in his voice. Fine, my son.
Excuse me.
Okay. Fine, my son. You are hired as a servant, but now I'm going to command you to get Princess Nomini, the most beautiful maiden in the world. I want to have her for my wife.
All right, said Fix-it-up, and that's a trifle for me. Your Majesty. I'm sorry, I can't get my shit together. This isn't even funny. Your Majesty shall soon have her. Just give me a coach drawn by 6 horses. I got this. A coachman. Okay, I'm going to start over because I'm clearly fucking this up. All right, said Fix-it-up. That's a trifle for me. Oh, Your Majesty shall soon have her. Just give me a coach drawn by 6 horses, a coachman, guards, couriers, servants, and a cook, all in full dress. I myself must have princely garments, and everyone must obey my commands. This is some Aladdin shit, except he's making that stupid guy his genie. Soon they departed. Fix-it-up, the servant, sat inside the coach, which headed straight toward the beautiful princess's court. When the road came to an end, they drove into a field and soon reached the edge of a large forest filled with many thousands of birds. A boisterous song soared splendidly into the blue air. "Stop, stop," exclaimed Fix-It-Up. "Don't disturb the birds. They're praising their creator and will serve me some other time. Let's go to the left." That's an interesting way to decide your GPS. So the coachman had to turn and drive around the forest. Oh my God, that sounds like driving with my mom in the car. Oh, there's too many curves. I don't want to get sick. Like, just put your head out the window. I don't want to... Anyway, okay, that was total non sequitur. Okay. Right. Doesn't like the birds. So the coachman had to turn and drive around the forest. Soon after, they came to a large field where close to 1,000 million ravens were sitting and crying shrilly for food. "Stop, stop," exclaimed Fix-It-Up. "Untie one of the horses way up front, lead it into the field and slaughter it so that the ravens can eat." "Damn, that's horrible. This guy's got some hard-on for birds." "I don't want them to suffer from hunger. You just want your horse to suffer by being slaughtered? Is the suffering of 1,000 hungry ravens, or what is it? Yeah. This actually said 1,000 million ravens. There was 1 billion ravens. One horse will not fit 1 billion ravens. I mean, unless this is just like some magical horse, like the never-ending raven-feeding horse, which I doubt still would feed 1 billion ravens. They're not going to wait their turn. By the time enough ravens descend on the horse and eat it, and it regrows and more ravens try to eat, the very last group of ravens will be dead because they wouldn't have been able to get to the one regenerating horse in time not to starve. I mean, that makes sense, right? They can only consume food so quickly, I assume. Again, not important at all, but I don't trust their logic. Okay. After the ravens had eaten, the journey continued and they came to a pond with a fish in it that was moaning and groaning. For God's sake, I have nothing to eat in this terrible swamp. That's not a fish. That's a homeless man dressed like a fish trying to get food. Or it is a mutant fish. It's one of those. For God's sake, I have nothing to eat in this terrible swamp. Wait. For God's sake, I have nothing to eat in this terrible swamp. Oh, throw me into a running river. Throw me into a running river. Oh, I want to get so wet. And I'll repay your deed one day. Before the fish could even finish speaking, Fix-It-Up had exclaimed, "Stop, stop! Cook, put the fish in your apron. Coachman, drive it to a running river. I half expect him to say, 'Wait, wait, let's go back and feed those ravens, you guys.'" Fix-It-Up himself got out and threw the fish into the water, and the fish flapped its tail in joy. "Now get the horses going," said Fix-It-Up. "We must arrive at the designated spot by evening." When he reached the royal residence, he drove straight to the best inn, where the innmakers and all his people came out and welcomed him in their best manners, thinking that a foreign king had arrived, though it was only a servant. Fix-It-Up had himself announced at the royal court, where he had endeavored to make a good impression and court the princess.
"My son," said the king.
This is a different king, guys. Ignore the fact that their voices sound fairly similar. They're different.
"My son,"
said the king. They very different from the first king number two.
"Many such suitors have already been turned away because they couldn't perform the tasks I assigned them to win my daughter."
I'm guessing the king is like an 18-inch dick. And nobody can take it. He's like,
"Let me fuck you and you may marry my daughter."
They're just like, "I can't do it. I'm sorry." My next erotic audio.
"I'll be a king. Bend over and take it."
Oh, God, but it'd be binaural, so it'd be good, right? It's still sexy. Okay. "All right," said Fix-It-Up. "Set any kind of hard task that you want me to do."
"I've ordered 1/4 liter of poppy seeds to be sown in a field. If you could gather them so not one kernel is missing, you shall have the princess for your wife."
"Ho-ho," Fix-It-Up thought. "That's not much for me." He then took a measuring cup, a sack, and snow-white sheets, went out into the field and spread the sheets next to the field where the seeds had been sown. Oh my God, it's just fucking birds that are going to do it, huh? That's why you got on their good side. He wasn't actually doing a kind thing. They were expected to pay him back. He's not a kind guy at all. He's some kind of weird wizard that commands birds to do his bidding. And now that's what it's going to be. This plot is obvious at this point. I mean, if you didn't see it coming, I don't know what to say. Ho ho! Makes it up that. Sorry, it really does say ho ho. How do you else do you laugh like that? It's not December yet. When the birds, okay. Soon after, those birds whose singing he had left undisturbed in the forest arrived, and they picked up the seeds, kernel after kernel, and carried them to the white sheets. When the birds had picked all of them up, fixed it up, poured them into the sack, took the measuring cup under his arm, went to the king, and measured out the poppy seeds for him. Now he thought the princess was already his.
But he was wrong. One thing more, my son.
We discussed this earlier. We all know what that one thing is. Okay.
One thing more, my son, said the king. My daughter has recently lost a golden ring. You must return it to me before you can have her.
Fix it up. Did not get upset. Let your majesty show me the river and bridge where the ring was lost. Then I shall soon return it to you. Ooh, this sounds like a freaking trap. Like, how did he know that it was lost in a river or a ring? What if she, like, flushed it down the toilet? What if she threw it away accidentally? He sounds like he was involved in this ring plot. He already knows way too much about it, and he shouldn't at this point. He shouldn't know anything. Fucking idiot. Doesn't he watch any true crime dramas? You don't say you know things. Play stupid. Talk to your lawyer. Okay, where was I? I totally got off topic. Okay, yeah, the river and the bridge. Yeah, I bet you fucking know about that. When Fix-It-Up was brought there, he looked down, and there he saw the fish that he had thrown into the river. It stuck its head out into the air and said, I'm a person, save me.
Wait a minute, I don't remember his fucking voice. Wait a minute, I'll dive below. A whale has the ring underneath its fins, and I'll fetch it.
Wait a minute. There's a whale in the river? That's I'm not going to go into details, but that is not right. It's one of those fresh river whales. Indeed, the fish had soon returned and tossed the ring onto the shore. Fix-It-Up brought it to the king, but the latter replied,
Now just one more thing.
What a fucking asshole.
There's a unicorn in the forest, and it's been causing a great deal of damage. If you can kill it, there's nothing more you'll have to do.
Fix-It-Up did not get very upset here either. That's fucked up. You're killing a unicorn. Oh, my God. Damn. That's not even upset? First of all, I'm assuming unicorns exist in this universe. But second of all, I can't imagine being like, hey, I really want to marry your daughter. And the father's like, sure, just kill the fuck out of this creature for me. Like, could you imagine if that happened nowadays? That's not normal. I don't want to, however, offend you. If it is normal in your situation, my apologies. I don't know every single human being on earth. I mean, I don't think I'd want to either. I can barely handle one. Fix-It-Up did not get very upset here either. Instead, he went straight into the forest where he came across the billion ravens whom he had once fed. Just have a little more patience, they said. Oh, they talk too. Creepy. The unicorn is lying down and sleeping, but it's not on the side where you can see its eye. When it turns over, we'll pick out its good eye. This is the guy we're supposed to root for? Freak.
Then it'll be blind and run furiously against trees and get itself stuck with its horn. That's when you'll be able to kill it easily.
This is ending up like some kind of Netflix documentary. About veganism. Okay. Soon the beast tossed itself around a few times and lay on its other side. All at once the raven swooped down and pecked out its good eye, that fucking unicorn. When it felt the pain, it jumped up and ran wildly around the forest, but they weren't done torturing it yet. After it got its horn stuck in a thick oak tree, Fix-It-Up, our supposed protagonist, jumped out, cut off its head, and brought it to the king, who apparently got tired of making things up and could no longer deny him his daughter. She was delivered to Fix-It-Up. Delivered? Like via FedEx. Who took a seat near her in the coach. He was in full dress, just as he had come, and immediately drove off and brought the lovely princess to his lord just to rub it in his face. Fix-It-Up was given a fine reception, and the lord's wedding with the princess was celebrated in great splendor. Then Fix-It-Up was appointed prime minister, and everyone clapped. Everyone in the company to whom this tale was told wished to be at the celebration. One person wanted to be her chambermaid. The other wanted to be her chamber pot. Stay tuned for my next erotic audio. Oh, God. Fix-It-Up was given a fine reception. Lord's wedding with the princess was celebrated. Blah, blah, blah. Everyone in this company, blah, 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 blah. Okay, one person wanted to be chambermaid, the other wardrobe attendant. Someone wanted to be a chamber servant, another the cook, and so on. The end. This seems like the original humble brag, right? All right, now we're going to do tale 17, The White Snake. Grrr, white snake. Yeah, baby, show me that white snake. Enough. The White Snake. Every day at noon, a covered dish was placed on the king's table. Then, after everyone left, the king would eat alone from this dish, and nobody in the entire realm knew what kind of food was in it. See, I'm thinking maybe the king has social anxiety or some kind of eating disorder, or he's just eating white snakes. I mean, we saw the title. One of the servants became curious and wanted to know what the dish contained. On one occasion, after the king had ordered him to take the dish away, he could no longer restrain himself, so he took the dish to his room and uncovered it. As he lifted the cover, he found a great white snake lying inside, and once he laid his eyes on it, he felt a great desire to taste some of it. That's right, men. Once you see a really big white snake, you can't help but put your lips around it. How should I get that out? Maybe it's inappropriate. Ooh, I can't tell. So he cut off a piece. Okay, that's not how you're supposed to eat your snakes. He cut off a piece and began eating it. No sooner did his tongue touch the flesh of the snake than he understood the language of animals and heard what the birds on the windowsill were saying to each other. Those were some gossipy bitches. On this very same day, the queen lost one of her most beautiful rings and suspicion fell on him. The king also said that if he was not able to find the thief by morning, he himself would be punished as if he had been the guilty person. The servant became sad and went down into the courtyard, where some ducks were resting in the water. As he was watching them, he heard one of them say, "There's something heavy in my stomach. I ate a ring that the queen has lost." The servant took the duck and carried it to the cook.
"Kill this one. It's fat enough."
"God damn. You can hear its thoughts. It clearly has thoughts like a person. It's pondering these things. You know, like it clearly knows what possession is because it was able to say that this was the queen's ring and she lost it. That's a big concept for an animal, personal possession, and how it would relate to other people outside of the duck, not to mention the fact that the duck is aware of the social norms of people, that this lady is the queen, not even just like the leader, but like the queen. He clearly knows the system that works out there, you know, like the fucking monarchy. He understands it as a duck, and you're saying, you know, kill this fucker. Can't even give it duck laxatives? Killing is the number one answer for most of these tales. It's cool to kill things. I mean, that's a lot of my stories too, but yeah, that mine come from a good place, not killing random animals, just people. So the cook cut off the duck's neck, and when he began cleaning it, the queen's ring was lying in its stomach. The servant brought it to the king, who was astonished and happy. Since he was sorry that he had treated the servant unjustly, he said,
"Demand whatever you would like, at whatever position of royal honor you would like."
Oh, okay. However, the servant declined every offer, even though he was young and handsome. His heart was sad, and he didn't want to remain at the court any longer. So he asked only for a horse and for money to travel and see the world. Well, he was provided with everything in the very best way. The next morning, he rode off and came to a pond where three fish were trapped in the reeds and were wailing that they'd have to die if they couldn't get back in the water. So he dismounted, took them out of the reeds, and put them back in the water. Then the fish cried, "We'll remember you, and one day we'll repay you." I think that was the voice I did the first time with the other story, and I've forgotten it. Really low voice. I'm remembering this now. He rode on, and while later he heard an ant king crying out, "Get away from us! Your enormous beast is trampling us with his large hooves!" The young man looked down at the ground and saw that his horse had stepped on an ant mill. So he turned his horse away, and the ant king called out, "We'll remember you, and one day we'll repay you by biting you when you're not paying attention." At least that's been my experience with ants. Might not have been the ant king, though. Soon the servant entered a forest where two ravens were throwing their young ones out of their nests. They said that their tiny ones were now big enough and could feed themselves. The young birds lay on the ground and screamed that they would die from starvation because their wings were still too small and they couldn't fly yet and search for food. So the young man dismounted, killed his horse with a sword, and threw the horse to the young ravens. Way to reuse plot points. And is this a common thing that happened back then, where people always like, "Oh, these ravens are hungry. Let's slaughter this very useful horse for these annoying ravens." I mean, ravens are cool and all, but holy shit, these horses are very disposable. They hopped over to the horse, ate their fill, and said, "We'll remember this, and one day we'll repay you. Caw." That was an excellent raven impression. The young man moved on and came to a large city where he heard a proclamation that whoever wanted to marry the king's daughter would have to perform a task given by her, and if he didn't complete it successfully, he would forfeit his life. Whew, that's, I don't know, man. Marry me or die. Many princes had already been there and lost their lives, so there was nobody anymore who dared to try. This is why the princess had the proclamation issued again. The servant thought about it and decided to declare himself as a suitor. So he was led out to the sea where a ring was thrown into it. He was to fetch it, and if he came out of the water without it, he'd be pushed back into the sea and would have to die in the water. No thanks. As he was standing on the shore, the three fish that he had taken from the reeds and thrown into the water came swimming toward him. One of the fish held a shell in its mouth, and the ring was in the shell. The fish set it down on the beach and at the feet of the young man, who was full of joy. So he brought the ring to the king and demanded the princess. However, when the princess heard that he wasn't a prince, she refused to accept him. And was he sent out into the sea to die in the water? Instead, she scattered 10 sacks full of millet seeds in the grass. He was to pick them all up before sunrise the next day. Is this like a fucking rip of the last story, you lazy fuck? You can't just make the same story and title it differently. I don't see why the fact that he can talk to animals even matters. The last guy couldn't talk to animals, and yet he understood them perfectly well. I don't think being able to talk to animals is apparently a secret special power, unless everybody's eating white snakes everywhere, and only this dumbass was the only one not fucking eating white snakes. I'm very confused with the logic in this universe. He was to pick them up, blah, 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 don't want to die. All at once, oh, see, this time it wasn't birds, it was ants. All at once, the ant king came up with all his ants, whom the young man had protected, and they picked up the millet seeds during the night and poured them back into the sacks. I would think he could just get the giant army of ants to threaten the king to let him marry the daughter. Be like, "Bitch, I talk to animals. These fuckers do my bidding. I'm going to marry her or they're going to fucking kill you." Have you ever been bitten by an ant? Now magnify that times like fucking 1,000,000,000,000, because apparently numbers don't matter here. You're going to die, bitch. I don't know. It's probably a terrible idea, but that's my thought. Just the army of ants, not the ants picking up the grain. When the princess saw the sacks had been filled, she was astonished, and the young man was brought before her. Since he was handsome, she liked him, but demanded that he perform a third task, go down on her. He was to fetch an apple from the tree of life. As he stood there and thought about how he might get it, one of the ravens, whom he fed with his horse, came and brought the apple back in its beak. So he became the princess's husband, and when her father died, he became king of the entire country. So, yes, he filled the sacks, and she was impressed, but it wasn't until they mentioned that he was good-looking that it seems like she was won over. So the whole grain sack thing was just a load of bullshit. Clearly, it's that, what's the number one rule? Be handsome. What's the second rule? Don't not be handsome. Like, it's just reaffirming that. She didn't give a crap. She's like, "Well, at least he's good looking. I don't care if he's poor." You know, she married for looks. Fucking despicable. All right, so that is that one. And I've got one more real short one. Okay. The journey of the straw, the coal, and the bean. A straw, a coal, and a bean came together and wanted to take a great journey. I'm sorry, I'm just... I'm trying to think of any universe in which I'm in like an English class or like a creative writing class. And they're like, hey, you have to write a story, a fantasy story. And I'm like, I've got a great idea, professor. And they'd be like, oh, okay, what's your idea? And I'm like, it's got three hilarious characters, friends on a journey. One's a piece of straw, one's a piece of coal, and one's a bean. They'd be like, let's drug test you. There's something wrong. This is not a good storyline. The straw, the coal, and the bean. I can take this seriously, though. I can. A straw, a coal, and a bean came together and wanted to take a great journey. They'd already gone through many countries when they reached a brook without a bridge and couldn't cross. Finally, Straw came up with a good idea. He laid himself across the brook, and the others were able to cross over him, first Coal, then Bean. Coal took wide steps and slowly crossed the straw, while Bean toddled after. When Coal got to the middle of the straw, however, his straw began to burn and burn through and through. Wait, coal is super hot? A lump of coal isn't naturally super hot. Coal fell fizzling into the water and died. Well, yeah, he was clearly burning up. What's that thing, what is it, the combustion when people, like, basically burn up on their own, whatever they call it. Coal was internally combusting. He was clearly going to fucking die. There was something wrong with him. You know, he just suddenly got so hot, he burned his other friend in half. Could you imagine if that happened to you? You wouldn't be alive afterward. You'd be so hot, your friend would be like, go walk over my back. You'll give me a back massage. And then your friend suddenly gets so hot, their feet literally melt through your skeleton. No one's coming alive after that. I don't see how it's either of their fault. That's fucked. Okay. Bean, who was somewhat behind, slipped and fell into the water but managed to help herself. I thought that was a guy. A little by swimming. Finally, Bean had to drink so much water she burst and was driven to the shore in this condition. Fortunately, a tailor was sitting there. He was resting while taking a hike in the woods. Since he had a needle and thread in his sack, he sewed Bean together. Ever since this time, all beans have a seam. That's really dumb. Oh my god. I mean, could you imagine if that's the way it worked with people too? Like you have surgery, you have like a really big scar, and then like ever since then, all of your descendants have that same scar forever in that same spot. You'll always be reminded of your trauma. Horrible. Sins of the father. Am I right? Okay. Anyway, this was a lot of fun. To be perfectly honest, I don't remember half of what I said, but I had a really good time recording this one. It'll be interesting to listen with my drunk one and the other one and see how my mood seems to differ. But I had a really good time, guys, and I will talk to you next week. All right. Love you guys. Mwah. Bye.